Welcome to the Menstruality Podcast, where we share inspiring conversations about the power of menstrual cycle awareness and conscious menopause. This podcast is brought to you by Red School, where we're training the menstruality leaders of the future. I'm your host, Sophie Jane Hardy, and I'll be joined often by Red School's founders, Alexandra and Shani, as well as an inspiring group of pioneers, activists, changemakers, and creatives to explore how you can unashamedly claim the power of the menstrual cycle to activate your unique form of leadership for yourself, your community, and the world. Hey, welcome back. It's great to be with you. I hope you're doing well today. Today, we're exploring a really vital topic to all of us who are looking to evolve, to wake up, to live in a way which is honoring and life-affirming, and that is decolonization. When you look out at the modern wellness industry in Western countries, you can see that it's borrowing really heavily from the ancient traditions of cultures from around the globe. Think turmeric lattes, cacao ceremonies, yoga classes, burning sage, the list goes on. And there's a really important growing decolonization movement, which is asking all of us to look more deeply and critically into our own practices and ask ourselves how we might be causing harm and how we can work to correct that. And our guest today is at the leading edge of this movement. In our conversation, she shares generously about her personal decolonizing journey so that we can all work towards, as she says in the intro to her brilliant Decolonizing Wellness podcast, appreciating, not appropriating. So Jyoti Rani is a menstrual cycle coach who practices, teaches, and embodies a decolonized approach to wellness, which is rooted in inclusivity, diversity, and an honoring of Indigenous wisdom. She's also a yoga teacher, and a big part of her decolonizing journey has been reclaiming her Indian heritage and the rich wisdom of yoga and Ayurveda, the knowledge of life, as she calls it today, which is India's ancient healing system. So, as an added bonus, we begin and end the conversation learning about Ayurvedic menstrual health, including what Ayurveda recommends we eat on our period. So let's get started with decolonizing wellness and Ayurvedic menstrual wisdom with Jyoti Rani. So Jyoti, thank you so much for joining us today. Thank you for being willing to have this conversation, for making the time. It's just wonderful to be here with you after kind of studying your work and listening to your work a lot over the past few months. Yeah, it's wonderful to be here with you.
Oh, thank you, Sophie. I'm also very excited to be here. I've listened to this podcast for a while now. So yeah, it feels a little bit surreal to be here, but also really exciting. And yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation and delving deeper.
Yeah, let's dive in. I mean, first, before we dive in, I'd love to hear where you're at in your cycle. We can have a cycle chat and see where we're both at and how that's going to flavor the conversation. Where are you at in your cycle today?
I am on cycle day 8, so I'm in my inner spring. And I do feel like I'm going through a bit of a, those transition days or crossover days. My menstruation phase is usually 6 to 7 days. So it does make sense, like I woke up this morning and did some dinacharya, which is like an Ayurvedic morning routine. So like oil massage, dry brushing, things like that, did some exercise. And now I do feel like a little bit groggy. And I was wondering, I wonder why that is. Because normally like I'd feel more invigorated for doing the dinacharya and the Ayurvedic morning routine. But I think it is because of that transition, like little feelings of anxiety. I'll be going away towards the end of this cycle on holiday. So thinking about that, like, what do I need to prepare? All of these thoughts that come up that I left whilst I was bleeding so I could bleed in peace are definitely arising. So yeah, that's where I'm at today. What about you?
Gosh, I don't know. I love it when this is the Menstruality Podcast. Yeah, it's day 14. So it's quite classic that I would forget where I'm at. Yeah, and I'm absolutely on fire. I feel like I've got lava flowing through my body because I care so much about this conversation that we're going to have, I think. So I'm shaking with it. There's a lot of charge in me, and but that's, I'm obviously close to ovulation. I don't think I've ovulated yet. I usually get quite a clear pain on either side of my pelvis. So I'm not there yet, but I've got a lot of rising energy, a lot of energy surging through me. So I'm just gonna breathe with that and like allow the
Yes.
charge of it. So much of what we speak about at Red School is how the menstrual cycle is schooling us and guiding us to live our calling. And this feels like a moment where, I'm in the right place at the right time with the right person doing the right thing. My calling is activated, and now I've just got to create some riverbanks for the charge to move through my system. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly what you mean. I love that so much. And we were just saying before we hit record, I've been meaning to email to ask to be on the podcast for quite a while, but I do feel like now is the right time. And we've already had to postpone it once because I was on my period. It feels like definitely right time to have this conversation.
Yeah. What does life look like for you when you're on your period? Like your practices, it was great that we rescheduled. Is that something that you often do? Yeah, what does life look like for you around your period?
Yeah, if I can reschedule things, like I will definitely try to. I try to rest as much as possible, especially those first 2 to 3 days. Of course, sometimes life it's just not possible, you've got plans that you can't change or meetings that you can't change. So resting as much as possible, taking things slower where I can't rest, like physically moving slower. I can't move fast. I can't, be walking quickly. Like I have to walk slowly. I find meditating easier in this phase, like when I'm bleeding. So I'll do that. I pull some tarot cards and like four tarot cards, one for each phase of the cycle, and journal on those, which is something that I have done consistently for a while now. It's like I did my menstrual cycle coaching training through Claire Baker's Cycle Coach School, and she suggests this as a practice. And I think since then, so it's been a f 3 years, I think. So since then, like it's been a really, if I do nothing else, that's the one thing I always do, essentially. So that's a really nice practice. Journaling, anything nourishing that I can do really for myself, like eating nourishing foods. Resting, relaxing, sleeping, watching Netflix, like whatever I need really, without too much judgment where possible.
Yes. Oh, yes. And from an Ayurveda perspective, are there practices or ways of eating and moving that you try to do when you're on your period?
Yeah, so from an eating perspective, it's but Ayurvedic principles advise that you don't eat oily foods or food that's hard to digest. So khichdi, which is lentils and rice, or just rice, soups, things like that, that are warming, but also have warming spices in. So, you want to be incorporating things like ginger and cinnamon and those warming spices. So I definitely try to do those things. And then in terms of movement, it's all about slowing down. Like Ayurveda explains that when we're on our period, and we're menstruating, it's the body's natural kind of way of detoxifying and removing the ama, which is toxins from the body. So we don't really need to do too much else to help it along in terms of, so like that Ayurvedic routine I was talking about earlier, I wouldn't do like oil massage, I wouldn't do dry brushing because it would then be too much for the body, like too much detoxification, if that makes sense. So yeah, slowing down, like maybe doing some very gentle asanas, like yoga poses, and not doing inversions because the movement of the blood and the body kind of fluids that are coming out of you are going downwards. So if you're doing inversions, even downward facing dog, then you're sending the energy the wrong way. So, that's kind of like the scientific reason behind it. Whereas sometimes I think we as women and people who menstruate hear, oh, don't do this on your period. And we think, hang on, that's not fair. We should be able to do everything. But when we actually understand why, it makes sense. Like really gentle movement. To be honest, on the first couple of days, I don't really do anything. I don't feel like I can. then I might start doing a few bits, really gentle asanas, going for walks, and that's about it. That's what works for me.
Beautiful. Thank you. I had a breakfast this morning that is probably exactly what I should eat when I'm menstruating, which was like a rice soup with vegetables and a little bit of egg. And I feel I studied yoga 15 years ago, probably. And there's a long story there that maybe we'll get into in terms of me, my own decolonizing journey. We'll see where we go. But I remember an Ayurvedic practitioner saying to me, you have a lot of vata. What you need to do is let all of your foods work their differences out in the pot and then eat them all together, as in like cooking stews and soups. And I've got ongoing digestive challenges. And I was like, I just need the ingredients to work it out in the pot before they get into my body. So that's
Love that way of explaining it. Yeah. And actually, like, a lot of Ayurvedic cooking is about that, trying to have everything cooked together rather than eating like a bit of something that's raw and then, you know, like salads or something, and then having something else that's warm. Like, all of that mixing can be difficult for digestion, especially when we're on our period, and especially, you know, depending on your constitution and what dosha is dominant for you.
But we could have a whole conversation about
that. I know.
So I wanted to speak a bit more before we get into decolonizing wellness, the ideas, the podcast, just about your cycle awareness practice, because there was something really beautiful that you said in your conversation with Sinu Joseph, who is an amazing menstrual health educator, and we'd love to have her on the podcast, and hopefully that will happen. You shared about the importance of us trusting our own body's wisdom, even though the powers that be in our world don't support us to do that or actively are calling us away from our own wisdom. And that cycle awareness is this amazing way of coming home to trusting in our own body's wisdom. So I kind of just wanted to lay those words at your feet and see what arose for you today in response to those.
I think for me, when, you know, someone asks, what do you do, or what's your work about, my phrase has always been like supporting people to come back home to themselves, because I really feel like that's the journey I've been on and I'm still on. You know, there's always more to uncover, more ways to come back to yourself. And I think for me, when I first heard about like the four seasons of the cycle and learnt that kind of framework, something just clicked and I just thought, oh my gosh, like, my life makes sense now. All of these constant moods and ups and downs and thought patterns, and, you know, sometimes I think I'm going crazy. Like, I'm sure, you know, you're nodding, the people that are listening probably feel the same. Like, I think we've all kind of had that light bulb moment. And I find it so frustrating almost when you have all these health practitioners who are ignoring the menstrual cycle, and it just doesn't make sense to me. I'm still learning more things about myself, making more links. And I think it really is important that as many of us as possible who menstruate are able to connect to that in our own way and, yeah, use it to come home to our bodies. And we do live in a world that doesn't support us to do that, unfortunately. So, you know, it's really trying to understand and then work with it how works for us, and understanding that that's different for everyone. Like, there isn't this cookie cutter way of doing menstrual cycle awareness, which I think is the danger, and kind of what I see sometimes on Instagram is that kind of cycle thinking happening. And that's just then capitalism and colonization coming into this beautiful practice that doesn't need that interfering.
100%. Yeah, I was looking at your Instagram this morning and there was a post where I feel that you described really potently some of the massive problems with the wellness industry. And I'd love to read it because I feel like it sets the context for this decolonizing wellness part of the conversation. So you said, I used to believe that wellness practices had to be picture perfect for Instagram. I fell for the stereotype that only a specific image fit the wellness mold. A skinny, white, non-disabled female with a Starbucks in hand, vegan, of course, and wearing activewear. And then you say, but those assumptions couldn't be further from the truth. Sadly, they're stereotypes perpetuated by the wellness industry, profiting from your unrealistic ideals. Through my journey of decolonizing my wellness practices and my mind, I've been able to challenge these stereotypes and assumptions. Like, can we unpack this? Because it's so huge. And I feel like until I saw it, I hadn't seen it. And then I saw it. And then I thought, holy, this needs to change. And then it's been a journey over the last, 7 years to see how alive it is in me and to decolonize my own mind. But so can you share why, like, what inspired the creation of the podcast? What gave you the courage to step out and speak these truths? And maybe a bit about your story too of growing up as a British Indian and how that's woven through this.
Yeah, of course. I've also been like on this journey, even though I am a person of colour, like an Indian woman. You know, colonization affects us all, whether you are in the majority that typically does the colonizing, if that makes sense, or like you are you're in the minority who have been colonized. So yeah, I think obviously my journey began from day one, even though I didn't realize it. So for me, I grew up in like a small town that was very white. There wasn't very many people of color in my school, in my primary school especially. In my secondary school, there was a handful of us in each year group. And I think because of that, I found myself very much rejecting my culture. I wanted to be like the people around me, like my friends who were all white, and I wanted to do the things that they were doing, eat the things they were eating, and, you know, live the way they were living. Not that my parents, you know, encouraged us to live that differently, but it was just little things, you know. And food was a big one. Like, I very much was like, I just want to eat English food or non-Indian food. But now I very much love Indian food and could eat it all day, every day. So that was throughout my school journey, felt like that. Like, I remember almost wishing, like, I just wish I could be white, life would be easier. Not that I necessarily experience overt racism or anything like that. I just felt that I was a bit different. And then I went to university and made friends who were like me, so were also Indian, and joined Hindu society. It was honestly incredible. Like, I found that there were just certain things I didn't have to explain to people. They just got it. And there was, I think for a lot of my friends, they'd come from like London or Birmingham, and they had this confidence in themselves that I didn't see in myself because they'd been surrounded by people who also looked like them. So they didn't have that, yeah, lack of confidence or lack of self-belief and self-worth that I very much had. I think, you know, I'm not saying that's fully from the way I grew up in terms of like being surrounded by people that didn't look like me, but I think that was definitely a part of it. So yeah, like coming to embrace my culture, my roots. And of course, when you go to university, most people feel homesick, like I definitely did. My friend dragged me to this Hindu society prayers, essentially. So we went one evening and it was a prayer that I hadn't actually heard before, but I just sat there and listened and suddenly just felt at peace. And it was only after, on reflection, that I kind of noticed this and started going more regularly. And it was just all these little things that really helped me to embrace my culture more and eat, you know, enjoy eating like Indian food. I think that also comes from not living at home. Suddenly I was like, I want my mum's cooking now. And then after that, so I became a primary school teacher, decided like I didn't really want to do that for the rest of my life. So I went to India and did my yoga teacher training. Excuse me. So this, I think, added like another layer to my journey, like deepened it even further, because here I realized like how ingrained yoga and Ayurveda is into my culture without, I hadn't realized. And the reason I went to India to do my yoga teacher training is because I knew that was the birthplace of yoga. And I knew there was more to yoga than I was seeing in the yoga studios I went to and the yoga classes. But to experience that, like, I really think everyone should go and do a yoga teacher training, even if they don't want to be a yoga teacher, because it's such a journey of a self-reflection journey, self-development. And it was the most incredible time. And I think also there was a point where I looked around and thought, wow, like all these people want to learn about things from my like ancestors' culture or my culture. And like, I don't even really, other Indian people don't even realize this, but here's all these other people who are so interested. So yeah, that was kind of the next layer. And then I think after that, I realized when I came back to England, like set up my business to be a yoga teacher, I then realized like, hang on, this isn't the yoga that I learned. Cause you know, I learned like the eight limbs of yoga. We did mantra chanting, we did meditation, we did like Ayurvedic practices in the morning, like nasal cleansing and things like that, like with the neti pot and everything. And I was like, no one's talking about that stuff. Like here we are, everyone's just talking about doing gymnastics on a mat, basically is what yoga is in the Western world. And that really frustrated me. And I started to see like, you know, other people talking about this, but not that many. And yeah, I just thought this isn't right, you know? And then of course in 2020, which is when I started my business, George Floyd was murdered. And that kind of sparked something else within me to really take a deeper look at my life so far. And that's when I sort of really started reflecting on how I'd been affected by racism and also, you know, other things. So that was kind of, you know, an added layer again. And yeah, the idea for the podcast had been in my mind for a while. Like, hang on, I know that like yoga has been completely whitewashed. I know like Ayurveda, not in the same way, but also has been, you know, taking certain herbs and putting them in everything. Like at one point, turmeric was in everything. Suddenly there's these ginger shots you can buy, you know, oiling your hair is a huge thing now, but like Indian people and other people in the East have been doing that for years. But you know, when like my mum would have come to England and walked around with oily hair, she'd have been completely bullied and, you know, called out for it, but now it's very normal. And I knew that's probably happening to like Chinese medicine, maybe like cacao, and you know, other things. So I really wanted to find the people who are from these cultures to understand what's kind of happened. And that's kind of where the premise of the podcast came from. So it's called Decolonizing Wellness, and it's really like a place for people who want to engage with wellness practices with integrity. So I speak to guests who are from like these indigenous wellness practices, and we just delve into like the history, the roots, understanding how we can appreciate rather than appropriate this practice, and how once we know better, we can do better. And it took me a while to actually, you know, decide to do the podcast. And I think part of that was because I was afraid that I was going to say the wrong thing. You know, I thought if I'm doing this podcast, then I have to know everything about decolonizing wellness. And I don't, I still don't, like nobody does. But there's such a cancel culture that, you know, you feel like you have to be able to say the right thing. You don't want to say the wrong thing. What if you get cancelled? What if X, Y, and Z? And I'm like a natural overthinker and perfectionist anyway, so throw that into the mix. So yeah, that's like been my journey. And then into the podcast, I did do it and release the podcast. And it's been an incredible thing to do. I had so many great conversations. And I'd love to do a season two, so watch this space.
And I'll drop a link in the show notes to the podcast. And particularly, I know we have a lot of yoga teachers who listen, and I'm sure many of you are on this decolonizing journey already, but the conversation with Susanna Barkataki is great. Really, really, really good to listen to. So I'll drop a link in the show notes, which will be at redschool.net/podcast. Wow. I mean, you've shared so much, and I'm so grateful to you for doing this work. And what I'm tracking, which I often track when I'm hearing people's life stories, is your calling, your purpose, your why. And I'm curious to hear how coming home to your cycle, or how you see the relationship to coming home to your cycle and the blossoming of this work in you. Big question.
Yeah, big question. I think my journey of coming home to myself is entwined with decolonization. And it's probably only something I've realized relatively recently. But I think this work of decolonization is for all of us to do, not just for the indigenous people. It's the responsibility of all of us. And in some, it's linked into all of our journeys in some way, whether we realize it or not, or we accept that part of our journey or not. And I think to really understand yourself as your true form, you have to strip away all these layers. And like we live in a post-colonial world, so the only way to do that is to strip back those layers of colonialism, of capitalism, of the patriarchy, of all the isms that we have to contend with. Yeah, to like come home and like figure out who we are without all of those, without all the expectations and the shoulds and the woulds and the coulds. And it's certainly not an easy journey. And you kind of think, oh, okay, yeah, I've got that one. And then the universe gives you another challenge, and you've got a whole other layer to uncover. And it really is a spiral.
I'd love to share a couple of other resources for you if you're wanting to go deeper with your own decolonizing journey. You might enjoy two more menstruality podcast conversations where we've explored Indigenous wellness practices. Firstly, with Maori mama and educator Hinawai Waitoa, episode 87, The Magic of Maori Menstrual Wisdom and Rituals. And one of my favorite parts of that conversation was where Hinawai described what she has in her kete ikura, which is her menstrual basket. And secondly, our episode with Dr. Cree Dye, who is an amazing woman who facilitates social justice, diversity, equity, and inclusion sessions on our menstruality leadership program now. And her episode is 138, Indigenous Cycle Wisdom and Menstrual Rituals. So I'll link to both of these in the show notes for today's episode at redschool.net/podcast, along with all of the brilliant resources that Jyoti shares throughout this conversation. Okay, let's get back to the conversation with Jyoti.
So we interviewed a woman called Asha Frost, who's a wonderful Indigenous Anishinaabe woman, and I'm now studying with her ongoingly. I just love her. And she led a ceremony for the last full moon, which was the maple sugar moon, the maple sugar moon. She spoke about coming back to the sweetness of ourselves, of our true selves. And she actually, in the ceremony, it was so beautiful what she did. She called on the ancestors to kind of flood in and clear out anything which comes from these colonial messages or these patriarchal structures or capitalist structures, so that the energy of the fullness of ourselves could flood our system and push out, make space, push out all of the ideas and thoughts and ways of living and ways of being that aren't ours, but that we've just been swimming in for so long, for all of us in different ways. And it was really refreshing to feel like, oh yeah, I can take a moment to say, out, get out of me. And so I can come back to myself, which I guess is a big part of what can happen for all of us when we bleed, really. That's our moment of, if we can be supported and resourced to rest, of coming so deeply home to ourselves that we can, yeah, have space from all of the different stories and systems that can crowd in and fill us up. Yeah. I'm just noticing a massive charge in me because over the past year, what I've been looking at actually in therapy is what happened to me in my yoga training, which was in Thailand and totally led by white European people. And there was a lot of abuse that happened in that school. So that's a big part of what
Wow.
we're reckoning with. And, there's Umadins Mwatulli and great people who are naming what's happening in the yoga world. So there's that. But also what I'm coming to terms with is how I traveled to another country and just took and took and took. extracted. It's this colonial extractive mindset. You know, I went to Thailand and I took from the Thai culture. I went to, you know, I then traveled to India and I was taking without understanding and owning the legacy of my ancestors. And it's just a big piece for the white women. I can only speak from myself as a white woman to do, and it's messy and confusing, and I feel like I'm getting it wrong all the time, but I still just feel like having these conversations and talking about it is what's absolutely necessary. And it's why I bow for this decolonizing wellness podcast that you've done, because it's such a resource for people to come and kind of practice hearing about this, being familiar with these conversations, so that we can each find our own way to not perpetuate it. I guess that's what I'd love to ask you really is, can you speak to how we can all work to honor cultures whilst we're also receiving a lot from them, so that we're working toward this culture of togetherness and belonging rather than extraction?
Of course. So there's a really interesting TED talk by Nikki Sanchez, sorry, and she talks about colonialism in Canada specifically, but I think some of the bits that she says is really interesting and can be applied to decolonization in general. So she says, "I really want to dispel this myth today that decolonization is the work of Indigenous people. Whether you have ancestors that were colonizers or colonized, we're all colonized people. So this work of decolonization is really work that we need to come together to do, with one another equally accepting our roles, our locations, our privileges, and ways in which we can move forward towards a future which looks like healing, looks like justice, looks like dismantling systems of oppression." And then she also goes on to say, "The history is not your fault, but it is your responsibility." And I think sometimes we can fall into that of thinking, "Well, I didn't do that, it's not my fault," but it is our collective responsibility. So I think that's just like something important to name. And then in terms of like how can we appreciate, not appropriate, you know, of course there's not like a tick list that I can give you. It's a journey, but there's definitely a few things we can do that kind of fall into different categories. So I think one thing is to honor the complex and sometimes bloody histories of wellness practices. So I think first we have to appreciate and understand our own ancestors. One of my guests, Rachel, says really beautifully in a podcast, "The depth at which I can honor and respect my own ancestors is the depth I can honor and respect someone else's." And I think in kind of mainstream British culture, like we don't necessarily honor our ancestors, or I say we, they don't really necessarily honor their ancestors that much from what I see. Obviously, I could be wrong here, but I don't think that they do. I'm sure, like before, like in pagan culture and so on, they were very much honored. Whereas in, you know, cultures in like in Mexico, they have Day of the Dead still, and they really honor their ancestors. In cultures in the East, you know, the ancestors are really honored. So I think it's first, we have to own and know our own ancestors, really understand like who we are, where we come from, our own identity. And I think when we're rooted in our own identity, then when we are listening to other people's or understanding other people's cultures, we're less likely to kind of steal things or take things without that honoring and without that respect. And also looking into like what were your ancestors' wellness practices, because it can be difficult to find, but we all have them, no matter the color of our skin. I think they've been better preserved in the East, and maybe that's why people are going there to get them. But we all had them, and that's not to say we can't, you know, it's not to say you have to be Indian to do yoga or South Asian to do yoga or anything like that. So yeah, you know, that change really does begin from within. So we have to take that step first. And then we can really explore, understand, and honor like the history and the roots of the different wellness practices that we engage with. And I think here it's just important to like diversify your information sources, you know, from social media, from books, from podcasts, like wherever you're getting your knowledge from. Like if you're learning about yoga and you only ever learn from a white yoga teacher, then unless they are really, really rooted in true yoga, then you're probably not getting a diverse enough knowledge of what yoga really is. And it does take time, you know, like it took me a long time to find people to interview because those aren't the people that the algorithm shows. Like there's so many people and wellness practices that I wanted to explore and I just couldn't find the right people to speak to. It was really difficult. I mean, it definitely snowballed once I found a couple. And I think in terms of yoga, like there's amazing South Asian yoga teachers out there that you can learn from now. And, you know, all the guests on my podcast are definitely people that you can learn from. And then I think like uplifting people of color voices, indigenous people's voices, and citing your sources and references, you know, not just saying, yeah, not ignoring that as though like you've come up with it or invented it. Like I remember when I told someone at the yoga studio I used to go to that I was going to India to do my yoga teacher training because that's where yoga originated, and she had no idea.
Wow.
And I was like, oh gosh, yeah, this would have been 2019, and I just thought, oh okay. And this was like really before I was kind of fully in this journey. So you know, a lot of people still don't realize. And like what you said at the beginning, Sophie, like once you see it, you can't unsee it. Sometimes you wish you could. You're like, oh, sometimes I think, oh, I wish I wasn't so conscious of these things. Life would be easier if I was just ignorant. But, you know, obviously, I'm saying that with a pinch of salt. I wouldn't want to be any other way, you know, because it is difficult to be on this journey and to see things and to constantly be critiquing things and so on. But yeah, uplifting BIPOC voices, sharing their work, paying for their work, not asking them to work for free, and using your own voice, I think, to be an ally and to use your privilege. You know, like I said, this is the work of all of us. It's not just the work of the people that have been marginalized and colonized. And I think also like questioning your teachers, your facilitators, the people you learn from, and seeing how they react, you know, like, are they very defensive? Are they willing to take it deeper? Are they willing to say, actually, do you know what? I'm not sure, but let's find out together, you know? I mean, that's what I was taught as a teacher, like a primary school teacher. Like, you know, when you don't know the answer to a child's question, that's okay. We're not like the source of all knowledge. And then I think the final thing we can do is making reparations to the communities where the practices that we come from were taken. You know, the wellness industry is a $1 trillion industry, but how much of that realistically goes back to the East? And whether we like it or not, money does equal action. So like choosing where you spend your money is another way of casting your vote. So where possible, like spending it with practitioners who are the indigenous practitioners or whose work is really rooted in decolonizing wellness and honoring the communities and practices. For me, I donate like a percentage of my profits every year to this amazing ashram in India. Are they offering scholarships to people who need it the most? Are they donating percentage of their profits, discounted rates? There's so many different things you can do. So yeah, I think those are the kind of the broad areas of different things people can be doing.
Yeah, that's a very beautiful and full list. Thank you. That's an amazing resource. And again, back to your podcast as a source of education for people. And I'm really so grateful for all the research you must have had to do to be able to create it. A resource also for women and people listening who originate from Ireland and England and Scotland and Wales. I did an episode with a woman called Tara Brading. We worked together to get Three Sisters started. But her calling has become helping women to come back to their own, the women from these lands, to their own original practices as part of our decolonization work. For anyone looking, I want to connect with the wisdom of Britain, of Ireland, then that could be a good resource too. I can't remember what number it is, but again, I'll put it in the show notes. Yeah. Can we talk about decolonizing the menstrual cycle?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously like a 10-hour conversation to be having, but
Yeah.
we're just beginning it now. Back to your podcast with Sinu Joseph. She was speaking about how women and menstruators have been in sync with nature all along, but told that this wasn't science. You know, it's not real because it's not science. Or, you know, she's mentioned how we've been called witches across the world, anyone who was connected to their intuition through their cyclical intelligence. But that mothers and grandmothers have preserved the practices. So we're blessed in our world today that there are still some original menstrual practices, especially. I just love to hear you speak about when you look out at the menstrual cycle world, how we can think about decolonizing that space too.
Yeah, I think I mentioned earlier about how there's no like cookie cutter way of practicing menstrual cycle awareness. And I think it's being aware of that, like how everything can become influenced by capitalism and colonialism quite quickly and quite easily. Thinking, oh, you know, we all talk about resting on your in your menstrual phase a lot, but that doesn't mean you can't rest in the other phases. And actually, rest is encouraged a lot, like all the time, I would say. Like, the more we can rest, the better. Like, women are tired. We need to rest. And I think also how we can honor our own cycle and perhaps looking back at our menarche, our first cycle, talking to your mom, your grandma about what they used to do, or if they know of any practices. Trying to go back into your ancestry and seeing what kinds of practices your ancestors may have done, creating your own practices now from what you enjoy doing at different phases of your cycle. But I think it's just really important when we're trying to decolonize our menstrual cycles to, I guess, strip back like everything we've been taught about what the menstrual cycle is, what it's for. You know, in the West, it's very much thought of typically is like it's there for you to have a baby. So actually, if you don't want to have a baby, then you can just turn it off with a pill. And you know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't take the pill, or you should, that's everyone's choice. But actually, like connecting with your menstrual cycle and your blood, and it's a very deep and intimate connection that you will end up having with yourself.
I'm thinking about when I get my blood in my moon cup and go and give it to the land, something's happening there. Like, I don't know if my ancestors way, way, way back did that, but I feel that when I do it, I'm connecting to something old, and that feels honoring and beautiful and life affirming. I don't know what people would think about me walking with they walk past with their dog and like, what's she doing with her jar of blood? So there's still so much shame around the cycle that is really connected to colonization. So yeah, simply loving our cycles, turning towards our cycles, loving our blood is a decolonizing act in itself, I guess.
Absolutely.
I think it would be really beautiful to hear about the Ayurvedic approach to the cycle, because you shared with me how it's different from the four phases and how it's similar too. Could you walk us into that?
Yeah, of course. So Ayurveda is the ancient knowledge system that comes from India and from South Asia, and it's thousands of years old. So Ayurveda means knowledge of life. So I'll just explain a little bit about Ayurveda before we go into the cycle, because I think it will help to kind of frame what it is. So Ayurveda is essentially based on like quantum biology, so the subatomic understanding of the body. So disease is really understood at like the subtle level of what causes molecular disturbance and chemical imbalance in the body through the three doshas. So you mentioned one of them earlier, Vata. So you've got Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. So because of this and the way that Ayurveda works, there's no compartmentalization of like biological systems or like the separation of mental and physical health. Like it's all entwined. And that's where it very much differs from the Western system, which is only now really coming to understand mental health and to entwine them back together almost. So Ayurveda that explains that menstrual cycle, sorry, our menstrual cycle or menstrual blood is a byproduct of the Rasa Dhatu or lymph. So it's really affected by what we consume. So Ayurveda explains that with a healthy cycle, your blood will be bright red in color. The bleeding will last around 5 days. There'll be no odor, and the quantity will be not too great and not too little. And then any other discharge or pain, mood swings, cravings, heavy bleeding, those sorts of symptoms are all signs of an imbalance. And essentially, it explains that that menstruation is really an important process because it removes those accumulated ama or toxins from the body, as I was saying before. And it's really seen as an advantage that only menstruators have. You know, we have this, let's say, monthly-ish, like unique insight into what's happening in our body. You know, there's signs for us every month if we choose to stop and listen. Indicators that things perhaps aren't quite right. And that's an advantage that we have that people who don't menstruate, they don't have that. And I think we don't always see having a menstrual cycle as an advantage, but it is a huge gift and blessing that we have a menstrual cycle.
It's giving us feedback. It's giving us feedback about our health right there. Yes.
Exactly. So we have our three doshas, and everyone has a combination of these doshas. And they can be imbalance or imbalance, so imbalance or not imbalance. And essentially each of these doshas forms a different part of the cycle. So where in menstrual cycle awareness we talk about the four phases, there's three phases in Ayurveda essentially. So we start with the Vata phase, which is Raja Kala, which is your menstruation phase. So Vata governs all the movement and all the flow in the body. So any movement that's happening in the body, any flow. And as I said, it encourages like the downward movement of this energy, which is why doing inversions isn't advised during this phase. So it's about clearing our menstrual blood, the toxins, etc., from the body. And that's not to say that our menstrual cycle or our blood is toxic or that it's dirty or anything like that. I think the word toxins again has been very overused, and we think of it in a very different way in the West as to what kind of it means in Ayurveda.
It's part of this colonial extractive mindset thing. It's like taking little pieces of information and then making them mean different things because they're taken outside of a whole holistic context.
Exactly. And even the word holistic has so many connotations that you almost don't want to use that word anymore. But yeah, absolutely. So then the next phase we have is Rutukala or the Kapha phase. So this is essentially from when you stop bleeding up until when you ovulate. So I guess you could say they kind of put spring and summer together. So Kapha is dominant here, and Kapha as an energy is very supportive and strengthening. So it's that energy that's coming into play as the endometrium lining thickens, essentially. So it's a time where we may feel our energetic best, we have greater stamina, can take on those more challenging tasks. So that's what's happening then. And then we go on to the final phase, which is the Pitta phase, the Ritu Vyatita Kala phase. And this is governed by Pitta. So after ovulation, we enter the Pitta phase of the cycle with progesterone maintaining the thickness of the endometrium. And it kind of brings around qualities of passion, of drive, of sexual desire. So we might feel more creative here, we can achieve more. We might perhaps at the beginning feel like socializing more. It's a very like ambitious, motivating energy of Pitta. And I think for me, I can definitely see that in terms of even like the few days before I bleed, I'm suddenly like, okay, I need to get all this done so I can bleed in peace. So that kind of energy.
And that fire that can come through
Yes.
in the inner autumn, it's yeah, this makes so much sense to me what you're saying. Yeah.
Exactly, yes, because Pitta is very much governed by fire, like it is our, you know, we have our digestion is governed by Pitta, for example. But then it also makes sense in the sense that excessive Pitta can then result in PMS, so like acne, anger, physical exhaustion, headaches, all of those things are often excess Pitta in the body. So if we can slow down in this phase, we can be curious, we can notice like what's no longer working for us. It can be really supportive. And you know, it's very much where that mask of like diplomacy is lifted. We don't feel like we need to live by other people's rules, by colonialism's rules, and so on. And you know, the world we live in encourages us to suppress these feelings, to act normal, whatever that means. Otherwise, we might be ridiculed for like PMSing, you know, that typical, oh, are you on your period? Or, oh, are you due on? Is that why you're behaving like this? Kind of comments that we receive. So, yeah, like listening to our intuition is highly important here as well. So, yeah, that's the Ayurvedic cycle in a nutshell. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, it does actually make sense when you think about what like Vata, Kapha, and Pitta are all governed by. And have a deeper understanding of that.
Is there a resource that you could point people to who are intrigued and want to learn more about Ayurveda and the approach, especially to the menstrual cycle?
Yeah, I think Sinu Joseph's book is an excellent resource. It's called Ritu Vidya, which is Rtuvidya. Yeah, her book is excellent. To be honest, there's not that much else out there. It's something I do talk about like on my Instagram and have done like workshops on and would love to do more in the future. So definitely, you know, follow, sign up to my mailing list, watch this space.
Brilliant. And where can people find you? What's your website? And yeah, could you tell us a bit about what you're offering at the moment if people want to come and explore your work?
Yes, of course. So I am at Jyoti Rani, which is actually, there's an underscore. So at underscore JYOTI dot RANI underscore on Instagram. And then my website is jyotirani.com. So I offer one-to-one menstrual cycle coaching, which is very much infused with Ayurveda and yoga through 3 months or 6 months coaching. And that program is called Devoted, and it's very much about being devoted to yourself, coming home to yourself, looking at various aspects of the menstrual cycle, and you know, your intentions and working towards those. Then I obviously have my podcast as well. I write blogs and lots of information on Instagram as well, and my email list or my emails that I send out to my subscribers. I also have, if you do sign up to my mailing list, you'll get 4 free menstrual meditations. So one for each phase of your cycle, which is a really beautiful way to connect deeper with whatever phase you're in.
Oh, that's a lovely offering. That's beautiful. Thank you, Jyoti. Wow, this has been really rich. And I do feel like we've sort of started 18 conversations and I want to carry all of them on. And I'm just so grateful to you for, yeah, the depth of wisdom that you bring and, yeah, that you've taken this journey and are now coming to share it with others is such an act of generosity. And I'm so grateful. And I hope we can, yeah, stay connected and, yeah, good luck with everything that you're doing.
Thank you, Sophie. Thank you so much for having me and giving me this space. I've really, really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you for staying with us all the way through to the end of this conversation. I would really love to hear how this one landed for you. You can email me at sophie@redscore.net. And I'm excited as because I've just been doing another wave of outreach for the podcast, and we have an amazing group of guests coming up. If there's a topic you'd love us to explore or a guest that you would love us to interview, again, please email me at sophie@redscore.net. I'd love to hear from you. So please subscribe to the podcast if you're not subscribed already. And it would be so helpful if you could take a minute to give us a review on Apple Podcasts. I think there's 35 there now. And it really helps the podcast to reach more people if you do that. So we'd really appreciate it. And I'll be with you again next week. So until then, keep living life according to your own brilliant rhythm.